All right, so I'm just going to do like a real talk real quick. So guys, I was supposed to have my next guest, Laurel, on about 6 months ago, June?
Something like that.
And my computer decided it didn't have enough memory and it corrupted the file. And I literally had, I think, half of it. So instead of trying to pick up where Laurel and I left off for our last interview, Laurel and I opted to get together again, have drinks, and talk about Marie. So that being said, I'd love to welcome Laurel. Laurel is one of my best friends. We've known each other for five years.
I don't know.
I feel like we just go way back anyway.
In 2020 terms, it's an eternity.
Yeah, exactly. We've been together forever. We met through her husband, Michael, through the USC alumni group. And it's funny because neither Michael or I went to USC, but some of our best...
And I definitely did not.
No. And our other good friend, Jen, also did not, but also part of that group. So I've met some amazing people through the USC group, none of which went to USC. Some of them did, but... some of our best friends came from that group, and we were just... My husband, Chris, and I were so blessed to learn about this really cool town next to Long Beach through Laurel. She grew up here in San Pedro. So we, no joke, ended up buying a home 300 steps.
300 steps. I've counted.
300 Laurel steps, because I think we counted and we take smaller steps.
Which is weird because you're both significantly taller than me.
I know. And we walk way slower, too.
So slow.
We're so weird. So, long time coming. I'm so thankful that you were willing to come back and do this again with me to talk, to tell Marie's story and do this all over again, because I was seriously heartbroken that I lost half of that file. I mentioned in my last interview that you guys have heard, I think 2 weeks ago now at this point, that I just want to do people's stories justice. And I always get so nervous beforehand, and it's just, I don't want to mess it up. And when we lost half of Marie's story, it really bummed me out, but Laurel was just so gracious and she's like, let's do it again.
Yeah.
I love talking about Marie anyway.
Like, totally.
We had a super fun time last time, and then I know we'll have a good time this time.
Absolutely.
Excuse me. So welcome, Laurel, to the podcast. I'll probably thank you like a million more times anyway.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So we're sitting here on a Saturday afternoon on Halloween 2020, and you know,
scariest year ever.
So why not? Let's just, you know, like let's hang out, do a podcast, and it's, you know, tomorrow is the Day of the Dead. So, and oddly enough, I don't know if you get this, but Chris and I had a Marie sighting today. We saw a lady walking downtown Long Beach with the gray puff hair. Almost similar, like height and like gait. Wow. I don't know if you've ever had that, but we're like,
no.
How random is that we saw Marie?
That's
today?
Awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, so, I love that.
Yeah, yeah. So tomorrow's Day of the Dead. So it's kind of a nice little nod of the head to Marie. So this is also a different type of story that we have today. Laurel is the daughter of Marie Bethel, and she. Had a rare form of a sinus type cancer.
Yeah, I thought about asking my dad again. He doesn't really like to talk about it. It wasn't that the details of the type of cancer wasn't something that was really a topic of conversation. So, so I opted not to ask him. So I can't tell you the precise medical term for the type of cancer that Marie had. Mm-hmm. So it was in her sinus cavity.
Yes.
In between her eye and her brain.
She ultimately passed away from this sinus cancer. And I'll just let Laurel take it away from here.
All right. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And thank you again for having me.
Thank you again for doing this.
Well,
I was mortified.
No, seriously, what you're doing with this podcast is so wonderful.
Thank you.
I listen to it every week, and it's just it's really lovely hearing all of the different stories. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously people telling their own stories means that they're surviving, which is fantastic. Yeah. But yeah. I appreciate that you're doing some of my version or Marie's version of the story, because those are obviously important too.
I think it's just as important, you know, to be able for, you know, their story to live on. It's a saying, but I know it's in a Macklemore song. He's like, you know, they say you die twice, once when they put you in the ground, and the second time is the last time someone mentions your name. So for your loved ones to carry on that person's story and to keep them alive through whatever legacy they leave, to continue to talk about them and share about their lives, I think is hugely important.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess I'll tell you a little bit about who Marie was before we get into her cancer.
Yeah.
Marie was actually my stepmom. She and my dad started dating shortly after my parents got divorced when I was 4. So all in, they spent almost 34 years together as a couple. They didn't actually get married until 2014, which was the year that Marie was diagnosed initially. And I'll get into why that marriage happened. It's funny, actually. For years, my dad basically once a year would ask her to marry him. They had both obviously, well, not obviously, my dad had obviously been married before and Marie had been married before. She and her first husband didn't have any kids together. And for years, every year my dad would ask her to marry him and she would always say no. It was basically like, yeah, I've done that shit before. We don't need to.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Am I not supposed to?
Oh my God. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Swear away. I checked the little e-box.
Okay, good.
Thank you for checking that.
I'm a professional chef, so I curse like a sailor.
Good. That is encouraged.
Excellent. I try not to do it gratuitously, but, you know, sometimes it's necessary.
Yeah.
Anyways, so she always said no, and eventually he just gave up asking. I don't know why, except that it just didn't matter. You know, they had built a life together. They were raising me. They, you know, owned houses together, a boat together, like all the things that married couples do. Yeah. They just
without the piece of paper.
Without the piece of paper. Yeah. And, you know, maybe if they had decided to have kids together, it might have affected that choice, but ultimately it didn't matter. So anyway, she and my dad started dating when I was 4. So she's been part of my life since basically I've formed memories. She and my dad both worked at the same company. My dad just retired, actually, and she worked until the day she died, essentially. So they worked together, lived together, did all the things together. They were absolutely each other's people, which is inspiring. And in 2014, as I mentioned, actually to back up for a second, for several years before then, she had been getting these, what her primary care physician called sinus infections, where, you know, she'd get the pressure behind her inner sinus cavity, and they were painful. And she'd go to the doctor, and he would just basically prescribe her nasal spray or whatever.
Yeah.
And this went on repeatedly for years. Obviously, he never sent her to get scans or anything, just assumed that it was sinus infections, and she never bothered to get a second opinion.
Yeah.
So if you take anything away from this conversation today, don't ignore things and get a second opinion. if someone isn't, if your doctor isn't trying to figure out why something is happening, you've mm-hmm. got the wrong doctor.
As opposed to just covering it up with medication.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a trend that I've been seeing throughout all of these conversations, people saying, A, get a second opinion, third opinion, whatever you need, and then also be your own advocate.
Yeah.
So that's just like take home. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, quote unquote, sinus infection after sinus infection. And then in 2013, early 2014, they started getting worse and she started getting these nosebleeds. And in 2014, she got one and went to urgent care and was seen by a doctor. I forget his name. And he was like, oh, that's weird. Okay. You know, let's deal with the nosebleed and mm-hmm. go from there. And within a month or 6 weeks or something, she had another one and went back to urgent care and happened to be seen by the same doctor.
Wow.
And he, after just those two visits, I mean, obviously a nosebleed that doesn't stop is a big deal.
Yeah.
But after just these two visits, he was like, clearly there's something going on in your head mm-hmm. that needs to get looked at. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not just going to send you away with some drugs. Yeah. I'm going to personally call your doctor and have him refer you to get a scan. I think it was an MRI, but I could be wrong about that. I don't know.
Sure.
So this is, I want to say maybe September of 2014. And she goes and gets the scan. And I remember I was at work and my dad called and he's like, you need to come to the hospital. I'm like, why do I need to come to the hospital? And he's like, Marie has a brain tumor. Because in a scan, that's what they thought.
It looks like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I went straight to the hospital. Marie, in Marie fashion, was like, I don't know why you're here. I'm fine. They'll figure it out. Like, just go home. Don't worry about it. But can you go get me a sandwich first? Because I'm fucking starving.
Freaking love Marie.
So obviously I got her a sandwich.
Mm-hmm. First things first.
So that kind of, that set off the initial diagnosis. It turned out not to be a brain tumor. It wasn't actually attached to her brain. It was in, as I said, in her sinus cavity behind her left eye, like pushing it up against the orbital lobe of her mm-hmm. left eye. You know, obviously getting the cancer diagnosis, all these dominoes start falling. Yeah. You start seeing oncologists and radiologists and figuring out what the plan is. Mm-hmm. My parents' health insurance at the time, I'm not going to talk shit on any particular health insurance company. I'm not going to say its name. But
it's very responsible of you.
suffice it to say that it was kind of a battle every step of the way to get her the treatment she needed and to get her seen by the doctors that she wanted to be seen by versus being sent to, like, you know, this office.
Specific. Was it an HMO or a PPO?
HMO.
Okay. That's a.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember why, but she and my dad were insistent on going to UCLA Medical Center. Mm. I think it's because a family member had been treated there or something. Yeah. Like, they wanted to go there.
Okay.
And I'm glad they fought and got that that situation covered, because the way the team at UCLA Medical Center kind of handles these things was really great. Like, they work as a team. They sit down and have conferences about the specific patient. Like, the oncologists and the radiologists and the ENT and everyone, like, sits down and talks together instead of, like, all having their own opinion. They come up with a decision together.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I feel like that's definitely kind of rare.
I feel like that's how medicine should be.
Yeah,
because,
logically.
Yeah. Because like, you know, your ENT specialist has a different special area of knowledge, mm-hmm. and can bring different ideas. And mm-hmm. but when they're all talking together, they can really work out what makes the most sense for this patient, mm-hmm. given all of the intricacies of yeah. the diagnosis and the options. Mm-hmm. So I'm really glad that they fought for that. It meant a lot of driving in traffic.
Yeah.
San Pedro to Santa Monica not fun.
For those who are not in the LA area, it's maybe 30 miles, but it can take upwards of an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Yeah.
Santa Monica is so hard to get in and out of.
So hard.
It's no joke.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was worth it.
Good.
So 2014 diagnosis, the decision is made that it wasn't really, well, first of all, she was stage four.
Out of the gates. Okay.
Because let's be honest, this thing was probably in her head for years, mm-hmm. undetected.
Yeah.
And frankly, probably exacerbated by the nasal sprays that guy was prescribing to her. Yeah.
Super.
Another person I won't name. But I will say, in addition to recognizing that if your doctor isn't kind of wanting to understand what's behind your symptoms, mm-hmm. no offense to people that are older, but this particular doctor was like really nearing retirement, mm-hmm. and maybe wasn't all that interested in learning new things.
Kind of like set in their ways, can't
yes.
teach an old dog new tricks,
right.
kind of thing. Yeah. They've seen it all, they know it all.
Right. Of course, this is just a sinus infection over and over again. Anyway, obviously there are benefits to having someone with more experience, but there are also benefits to having mm-hmm. someone younger who is not fresh out of
like
medical
kind of
school,
but
like still up on all the new technology.
Yeah,
and
the research.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, so my understanding, again, I wasn't in these meetings with the doctors. I didn't go to the doctor visits with my dad and Marie. Mm-hmm. But so all of this is based on my understanding of what happened. But it's my understanding that it was decided that it was too risky to try to do surgery. Basically, if they were going to try and cut it out, they were going to have to remove her eyeball and get in there through her orbital
socket,
but also cut like up underneath her cheekbone. It was like a mess. Talk about a Halloween horror story.
Seriously, eyes freak me out.
Yeah.
Like my sister touching her eye. She used to just like chase me around the house and do that. Just thinking about taking the eyeball out, just
yeah.
like hanging.
Yeah.
Just hanging there.
Whoa. Yeah. And Marie was an avid reader, and this surgery almost certainly would have permanently blinded her. And so even if it was something the doctors were willing to do, she didn't want that to be the first option.
And it would have just blinded her in that eye?
In that eye.
Okay. I wasn't sure if it would affect the optic nerve in the other eye.
No, I don't think so. So the decision was made to not do surgery and to instead do radiation and chemo. So it was, I want to say, at least a couple of months of weekly radiation and chemo treatments. She tolerated the chemo, as far as I know. Again, she was, my dad calls her a tough muff. she was the kind of woman who never complained about anything.
Yeah.
And so it could have been that she was completely miserable and nobody would have known because mm-hmm. she didn't want anyone to worry about that. Obviously we did, yeah. But yeah.
I think it's definitely a Marie trait, but that's also like a female trait.
Yes.
You know, like not wanting the sympathy or to be taken care of too much.
And yes.
It's
absolutely. I mean,
the mode we go into.
And not surprising, when she was first diagnosed, I think one of the first conversations that I had with her outside of the presence of my dad was her telling me, no matter what happens, you have to take care of him because he's not going to handle this very well. So
she had the foresight. She's like, I know, Ray, he's just not going to.
Yeah. Yeah. My dad's a sensitive man.
Yes, he is.
He is.
We love Ray. He's the best.
So radiation and chemo. She didn't lose all of her hair through that round of chemo. She did lose the hair right along where the radiation entered her head. Mm-hmm. So, but you couldn't see it because like the top portion of her hair covered it.
In pictures, guys, you'll see Marie's majestic head of hair.
So much hair.
It's amazing. I love it.
So she didn't lose her hair. And she went through that initial chemo and radiation, and she just powered through it. Like, she, on the one hand, when you're given a stage 4 cancer diagnosis, like, I think she was ready for whatever happened, yeah. But she didn't want to not fight.
Yeah.
So, you know, she was a very pragmatic person. She's like, all right, so if these are my options, I'm going to die mm-hmm. someday, hopefully not sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. Let's see what happens. And she was willing to let them kind of fire the big guns at her to try and knock it out and, mm-hmm. you know, let the cards fall where they may. But I know that she was mentally preparing herself for it to not work. You know, I helped her do her medical directive right after the diagnosis, all of that stuff, because she didn't have one before.
God,
that's another thing.
That's got to be a very sobering moment.
It is. My family has always been very pragmatic, I guess is the word. Like, we're not people that are afraid to talk about end of life issues, which I'm thankful for. I mean, let's be honest, as humans, every single one of us is going to die someday, mm-hmm. and we don't have any control over that, but we can make sure that the people that we love know how we feel about certain things. So medical directives, very important. Mm-hmm. I'm also married to a financial advisor who will tell you exactly the same thing. anyways, so first round of treatment, she powered through it and went into remission. I think she was fucking shocked.
Really?
I do. But she was stoked. She went back to work as soon as she could because she loved her job. Yeah.
She was great at it too.
Yeah, she was great at it. Yeah, yeah. So she went back to work and we had, I think, about almost 4 years before things started getting weird for her again. She started getting headaches again. She started getting really tired again. And obviously, you know, she was getting regular scans and all of that, and nothing had shown up. But I remember one day she looked at me and said, "Yeah, something's off. Something's wrong." I think that was actually right around my wedding.
Yeah.
I got married in April of 2018, and yeah, she was tired.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember she ended up going to bed early that night.
Mm-hmm. So long story short, sometime that summer, they found another tumor. This one in the same general area. And they couldn't do radiation again because your body can only handle so much radiation. And they also couldn't cut it out. They couldn't do surgery. So the only option again was
chemo.
And they hit her with a real rough potion. Which was way harder on her body this time around. I don't know if it was just because of the different formulation or if it was because she'd already been through chemo before. I don't know, but this one really knocked her on her ass. Mm-hmm. She did lose her hair this time around, which really bummed her out, but
yeah.
She went out and got herself a cute little pixie cut.
Exactly.
It was really cute. And then it turned out that this time around, the tumor was far more aggressive than the first time around. It grew much faster and ended up pretty quickly attaching itself to her brain. So ultimately that is what took her out. In early February of 2019, I guess in January of 2019, she had to stop doing the chemo because it was just, it was not working and it was just wrecking her. So my dad and Marie were big travelers. And she wanted to go on one last trip. So she was always the planner of trips. My dad was just happy to, you know, tag along and do whatever Marie told him to do.
Yeah.
And they took so many really great trips. And one of the trips that they had never taken that she had always wanted to do was she wanted to go to Moorea, a Tahitian island. Tahiti? Moorea?
Yeah.
My sure. Geography is failing me. Anyways.
Don't. We're really smart, I swear.
She really wanted to go to Moorea, which sounds great until you factor in the fact that someone's sick and at that point in a wheelchair and it's halfway across the world, actually pretty much across the world, like on the other side of the planet.
Yeah. And it's wintertime.
Yes.
Or early spring.
Yes. Turns out, FYI, February in Moorea is not pretty.
Not a lot of people there either.
No. But my dad took her. Because how can you say no, right?
Yeah.
Like you do it. You just figure it out. He got all the travel insurance. Like if something bad happened, he was going to be able to get them off that island and get them to an American hospital and do what he needed to do. Mm-hmm. And so they went. And it was maybe 2 weeks after that that she really took a turn for the worse. And basically within maybe a week of that, we called in the hospice service, and within 2 weeks of that, she had passed. So I suppose you could say that she and we were lucky that it happened quickly, because it was miserable for her, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it's also pretty miserable for the people taking care of
caretakers.
Someone. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I was listening to your conversation with Whitney.
Whitney, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to.
Yeah. And she's absolutely right that there's this feeling like you want it to end, but you feel guilty for wanting it to end. Mm-hmm. And it's not that you want this person to go. It's mm-hmm. that you don't want them to be suffering anymore.
Yeah.
And it's okay to not want to suffer along with them. Mm-hmm. I think that's important for people to understand.
Yeah.
You're not a bad person for having trouble and for wanting it to end.
Mm-hmm.
So we were lucky enough to be able to keep Marie at home.
Mm-hmm.
She really did not want to be in a hospital.
That's fair. I think, you know.
Yeah.
Be most comfortable.
Yeah, yeah. And my dad didn't want her to be in a hospital either. He wanted her to be where she was happiest, and that was at home. They have a great house with a beautiful view of Catalina. Mm. And, you know, it was good. If I could change one thing about our experience toward the end, it would be that I would have tried to encourage my dad to bring in the 24-hour nursing care sooner. We started the process with hospice, and then it was another week before our head hospice nurse, the one who kind of a social worker that checks in with you mm-hmm. really every day at that point.
Mm-hmm.
She kept trying to convince us to bring in 24-hour care so that, you know, we weren't having to clean Marie and
yeah.
change her sheets and give her the medications. It's brutal.
It's a lot of work.
You're
emotionally involved.
Yeah.
Too.
And it takes away from your ability to just be there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, calculating the amount of medication and figuring out how to get it in there when someone is essentially in a coma. Like, what do you do?
Yeah.
So if I could change one thing, it would be to bring in the help earlier
mm-hmm.
because it really did help us to just be with her and not have to worry about all of those things.
Yeah.
And the hospice nurses, all of them were fantastic. People who do that are angels.
Yeah.
To face death every day of your life and have the compassion to do it and have the compassion to deal with the family is extraordinary. And I have nothing but respect for our nurses and for anybody who chooses to go into that line of work. It was phenomenal.
Special place in heaven for them.
Oh my God.
Even not being very religious, they're like you said, angels.
Yeah.
Special place to
totally.
Heaven. Okay. So, I know we talked about it before and, the part that was lost, sad face. And Whitney actually mentioned it being a cancer advocate and a family advocate for people who have been diagnosed with cancer. She had mentioned kind of at end of life having a surge, mm-hmm. these people having a surge. And you said that you had an experience with Marie with that as well.
Yeah, we did. She had essentially been catatonic for a week. Like, mm-hmm. not, I mean, she was alive, but she was non-responsive. She wasn't speaking. She would moan every once in a while. Oh. It was awful. And then one night she woke up and she couldn't sit up. She was too weak to do that, mm-hmm. but she wanted to get up and wanted to come have dinner with us. So my dad walked her out to the dining room and we sat and we had a wonderful dinner. I made coq au vin and opened at least one, probably more than that, amazing bottle of Chardonnay, which was her jam. And we had a lovely dinner. And I got to tell her I loved her. And my dad took her to bed that night, and that was the last we ever got to speak with her. Obviously, we spoke to her, and hopefully she heard us. They say that they do. But there was a moment after my dad put her to bed that night where I could see that he was getting excited.
Yeah.
Like, okay, maybe we're turning the corner. Things are going to be okay. And I can't remember if I said it or if I was just thinking it, but I knew that that was the best we were going to get. And we needed to just appreciate that. And it was clear the next day that that's what it was. It was a surge, and I am not a religious person. But if there's a God, then that is a gift that he gives to families in this position.
Stop. I'm just like, the fact that you were so appreciative of it and you took full advantage and had wonderful dinner and wonderful Chardonnay. And
here's a sense of Marie's fabulous sense of humor. When my dad walked her out of the bedroom that night, the hospice people had brought in one of those hospital beds, and it was in the living room. And they had brought it in a couple days before. And when they brought it in, I looked at my father and said, "She is going to fucking flip when she sees that if she wakes up," because they're hideous.
Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah. Well, metal, and you know, they're just ugly.
Yeah.
And so I dressed it up. I put like her favorite comforter on it. I got her these nice sheets. I'd you know, gotten married the year before, so I had all this random, yeah. I DIY'd my wedding the year before. So I had all this random, like, kind of rustic decoration stuff that I could put on it, like pearl strands and blah, blah, blah. And I made it look as nice as I possibly could.
Yeah.
And so when she saw it for the first time, she had been in it for days, but hadn't actually seen it. And when she saw it, she said, "What the fuck is that?" But, "Oh, that's my comforter. And that looks kind of nice." And we moved on. I absolutely, not that I'm saying that you shouldn't have hope, because obviously everybody's cancer is different, everybody's situation is different, everybody has a different belief system. Mm-hmm. But don't miss out on the opportunity of just enjoying that surge.
Yeah.
Don't get lost in hoping that it's something more. Enjoy the moment, because it might not be more. You might not get more.
Yeah. That's solid advice. And I know that's what Whitney was saying in she had been there as well. And for her to give that, almost that gift to families or young people, just be like, you know, make sure you take a lot of photos together, enjoy the time together. Obviously not telling them like, this is probably it, but you know, just being in that moment.
Although I will say that our head hospice nurse that day was very honest and said, you know, this happens and it's probably a surge. She was great.
That's
appreciated
fantastic.
It. Yeah. You know,
The honesty.
I think that she recognized that our approach to dealing with this illness was very pragmatic, and you know, that one of the first questions they ask you when they come to meet with you, when you call in hospice, is whether you're religious and what your, you know, belief system is and blah, blah, blah. So they knew at that point, like, we're not a religious family. So it's not like we're looking for, you know,
for prayers and
but
rites or anything.
Right. So I appreciated, it wasn't like she was blunt about it, but you know, in her delicate enough way, it was straightforward that this is wonderful and we hope that it's more, but given my years of experience dealing with this.
And I imagine that's got to be a difficult thing as another difficult thing as a hospice nurse, hospice practitioner to give that kind of news. To be honest, yet gentle.
Yeah.
Obviously, lots of years of practice, but I can't imagine it gets any easier.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
One of the other interesting things that she said to us was that in some ways, Marie was lucky to have essentially brain cancer, because the way your brain functions, she wasn't in pain at the end. Obviously she was on pain medication, all of that, but in terms of how your brain functions, like, it essentially shuts down your body in a way that you're at least not aware of the pain. Whereas you know, my husband's aunt died shortly after Marie did. Yeah, it was like 6 weeks after.
It was fairly close.
Very close. And she had, I want to say she had intestinal cancer. And it was, she was in agony until the very end. And so, again, I'm not a religious person, but I think whatever being is out there for that blessing for Marie, that she went as peacefully as one can in those circumstances.
Yeah.
But,
do you have any favorite stories of Marie? I know, I'm sure there's countless, but there anything that sticks out
so
for
many.
You?
There really are so many. She just, I think she just had this way of, no matter who you were or your relationship to her, she had a way of making you feel like the most important person in the room. And that was really special. She and I actually, I studied for a year abroad. I studied in Italy, and my parents, Ray and Marie, came out toward the end of my year to visit. And my dad was there for 3 weeks, and she stayed for an extra week. And we had never like traveled alone together before. We had traveled as a family together. And she and I went to Austria and to the Czech Republic together. And it worked out. We definitely had, you know, some tension, as people do when they travel together, especially for the first time.
Yeah.
But one of my favorite moments of that trip with her was when we were trying to figure out, we had rented a car and we were trying to figure out how to get into Prague, which is surrounded like by this giant circular highway, and the Czech language is like all consonants. Yeah. They don't believe in vowels or something. I don't know. And I'm in the passenger seat, and this is 2002. So it's before, you know, all the great technology that we have now, and which just makes traveling so much easier. So I'm sitting there with a damn paper map trying to figure out what's going on. And, you know, we're driving and she has to go the speed that everyone else is going. And so I can't read the road signs, and she's screaming at me and I'm screaming at her. And it's just like, somehow we made it into the city, but it was just one of those moments. And when we finally made it into the city, we both just burst out laughing because it was just so ridiculous. And I wish we had had a camera on us. Like,
did that really just happen?
Yeah. Tell me where to go. God damn it. Like, I don't fucking know. but yeah, she was a special lady.
She was awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't know her for super long, and obviously I knew her through you and Ray and everything, but she left kind of a wake around her.
It's a good way to put it. We're boat people.
Yeah, perfect. Didn't even like put two and two together with that. But it's just like her energy and her spunk and enthusiasm could fill a room. Mm-hmm. And the energy that she just gave off was so infectious. And you wanted to be around her. Mm-hmm. And kind of like what you're saying, like she makes you feel like the most important person in the room. It's like you want to be talking to Marie. You want to be around her. You want her to notice you. Mm-hmm. And she, from what I knew of her in, you know, the short time that I knew her, she was a special lady. And to have her as a good female influence and a motherly influence growing up is just another blessing right there.
Yeah.
And for someone to match or to be the perfect complement to Ray as well. And
definitely
she's put here on earth for a reason. And yeah. I'm glad that we all got to meet her and we get to tell her story.
Absolutely.
So
I was going to tell the story of why they finally got married.
Oh yeah. I meant to circle back around. I couldn't remember if it was last time or this time. Yeah. I was like, do we talk about that yet?
So again, her initial diagnosis came, I want to say, in September of 2014. Okay. And health insurance being the way it is, you know, she had always had insurance, her own insurance through work. Mm-hmm. And when she had to stop working because of being in treatment, she was going to lose her insurance coverage, which I'm just going to go on a little rant for a second, if that's okay.
Do it.
I think it's fucking stupid that this country puts the responsibility of providing health insurance coverage on employers.
Yep.
It's stupid. Because what happens is people get sick and then they can't work and they lose their insurance coverage. Mm-hmm. Exactly when they need it.
Yeah.
Stupid.
You pay into it all those years.
Yes.
And so then when you actually need it.
It should come as no surprise that I believe in a single payer health system. Rant over. It's also, from my perspective, it's stupid. It's stupid to put that responsibility on employers.
Yeah. No, I agree.
It shouldn't be job related.
No.
It has nothing to do with your job. Anyways, so she was about to lose her health coverage. Mm-hmm. And this is with a company that she'd worked for 30 years at this point, mm-hmm. Which is not to say that they didn't care about her or that they did anything wrong. Mm-mm. They would love to have helped her, but the reality of the situation was she wasn't working and therefore she was ineligible.
Yeah.
It's just the facts, ma'am. Yeah. So when the HR director pointed that out to my dad, he came home and asked her to marry him. And she looked at him and said, "What the fuck is wrong? What's going on?"
Yeah.
And he explained it to her, mm-hmm. and she was furious.
Rightly so.
Rightly so.
Yeah.
But when she calmed down, she recognized, you know, that's the situation. Mm-hmm. That's how our insurance coverage system works in this country. And so they went out and got a marriage license, and it was the middle of December, 2014, 12, 13, 14, as a matter of fact.
Uh-huh.
And they were getting ready to go somewhere. It was like a Saturday. And I just to back up for a second, I am my father's neighbor. I rent from my parents.
So. There's nothing wrong with that, dude. We live in California.
It's great.
I can't afford to live in California. Thank God I have a husband who can.
Yes, my dad and Marie lived in the house behind mine, or I live in the house in front of theirs, however you want to look at it. Tomato, tomato. Mm-hmm. And I noticed they were getting ready to go somewhere. I'm like, "Hey, where are you guys going? You know, what's going on?" "Oh, we're just going to go to your aunt and uncle's house. You know, Rick's going to marry us." I'm like, "You're doing what?" My uncle is a former judge, Superior Court judge in California. And I said, "Were you going to tell me this was happening?" "Oh, it's no big deal. You know, just doing this for the insurance, blah, blah, blah." I was furious. Like, I am your only daughter. You might not think it's a big deal, but you're getting fucking married.
Yeah, fuck
so
that man.
I am coming with you. And my aunt was so sweet. She had a cake made.
She's
and
a great
she
hostess.
Opened, she's such a great hostess. She opened a bottle of Dom Perignon. Mm. It was really sweet. And it was just the five of us in my aunt and uncle's backyard. And, you know, Marie was in a pair of shorts, as always. And my dad was probably in his Birkenstocks, as always. So, yeah, that's why they got married, finally.
He finally wore her down.
Yeah. Only took a broken health insurance system.
A story for the ages.
So romantic.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I'm so glad that we came back for the story. I love that story.
Yeah.
So I guess we talked about this last time. I don't know if your answer is going to be the same or different, but what would you think that Marie's legacy is? You know, what lives on after her passing? Or what would you like, you know, to share about her to other people, what she believed in?
Well, I think the first thing I would say is she would tell you to go fucking vote.
Yes, ma'am. That's what I was hoping it was going to be that answer again.
She was very interested in, you know, current events and politics. And I love her and I miss her, but I am so glad she is not around for 2020 because mm-hmm. I don't know how she would have handled it. So yes, she would want you to go vote. Mm-hmm. She would obviously have very strong opinions about how you should vote, but she would just want you to vote. She was kind. And I think that one of the things that I hope people will always remember about her is that. And I hope that memory inspires people to be kinder to each other, because obviously it's something that's lacking in the world right now. And a little bit of kindness just goes so far.
Even if it's
just, you know, smiling at someone or
It's hard through a mask, though.
Yeah, it is hard through a mask.
I try really hard with my eyes.
I do, too. I'm always, like, hi, waving hysterically like some sort of crazy person. Or, you know, she was really good at remembering people's names, which I'm terrible at. So, you know, that's never going to be my thing. But that was one of the ways she made people feel special. Like, she knew everybody's, not only your name and everybody's name, but like, oh, how's your cousin so-and-so who was sick and blah, you know, she remembered
really great details.
Yeah. And I hope that people are kinder to each other like she was.
Yeah. That's definitely a good take home for especially the climate that we're in.
Yeah.
2020. It's been a tough year and people are on edge. People are stressed. People are angry and sorry about that. You got a stinky breath in your face and they're stressed and it's everyone's so on edge. So we're all quick to be mean, to be hateful. And we just need to remember to step back and be kind first and foremost.
Exactly.
Not just everybody's going through a hard time. Everybody's battling a big battle. It doesn't matter what it is, but.
Yeah. One of the big things for me recently, and I think Marie totally would have been on board with this, is if someone's being rude to you or giving you some attitude, recognize that they're going through something. Mm-hmm. And instead of giving attitude back or being rude back, being kind can totally flip the script on the whole situation. Mm-hmm. and maybe make their day. Yeah. You know, maybe change their day. It can be hard right now to do that, but I've been trying to be aware of those situations. You know, when a cashier at the grocery store is rude or whatever, like, instead of being rude back, just
smile,
have a lovely day. Thank you so much for everything you do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Sometimes that's all it takes for people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've definitely been trying to focus on either giving somebody a compliment or, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
Working on not quickly jumping to judgment.
Right. Even weird little compliments, like, go really far.
Yeah.
Oh, I love your mask today.
Yeah.
I love how it matches your outfit.
You. Yeah. It's so funny. I got a facial today and the you have to call for them to let you up and take your temperature and all that stuff, you know, so they can, you know, manage people going in and out. And the girl, the front desk girl, she answered the phone when I called. She came down and got me and I was like, has anyone ever told you you have the best phone speaking voice? Like, you could actually hear her smile and she sounded like she was happy to be there. And she's like, no one's ever told me that before. I was like,
that's a good amazing one.
And she's like, you just made my day. I'm like, good.
It's all it takes.
Yeah. Just warm fuzzies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess we're kind of like coming down to that time. Is you did give advice for getting a second opinion. Is there anything else you'd like to share? Any other advice that you would like to give? Special projects or causes that Marie had a heart to that you'd like to share? Anything?
Oh, I mean, she definitely had causes that were close to her heart. I think, though, that this year her big one would be getting out the vote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I feel like I covered the advice that that I really take away from my family's experience.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to recognize when there's something wrong. When that's the wrong way to say it. If you feel weird, mm-hmm. if you feel like there's something wrong, don't ignore that feeling. Mm-hmm. And then yes, get a second opinion. Don't be afraid of 24-hour nursing care when you get to the hospice stage. Mm-hmm. That might be my biggest one.
Yeah.
As a family member, it is the one thing that I would change.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Laurel, thank you so much for not only doing this, being here, but being here a second time
to of course.
Tell Marie's story. But if anybody else out there has a story they'd like to share or they'd like to reach out, I'll just leave a little bit more information to reach out, either share your story or if you need advice or someone to talk to. I'm sure I can line you up with somebody, whether, you know, it's just someone who's been through it, whether it's a cancer coach or Laurel or somebody who's had cancer as well. So once again, thank you for being here. And I hope everybody enjoys the rest of their day, week, and don't forget to get out there and vote.
Absolutely. Last chance.
Yeah, it is.
You dropped this on Monday, right?
It's going. Oh, shoot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. It's going to be good.
Come on, guys.
Yeah. Get out there.
Got one more day.
It was so great editing this podcast and listening to the conversation all over again. Thank you so much, Laurel, for coming back a second time and telling us Marie's story. It's a really freaking great story. I really enjoyed hanging out with you on Halloween. Although we did not get this dropped in time for Election Day, is the week after. I know Marie would have been super proud of all the new voters, young voters, voters of different races, religions, creeds, getting out there for the first time or one of many times. Voting is extremely important, not just this year, not just in 2 years, but stay on top of your local government. That's where a lot of the biggest change that you can make happens. So do your research, do your due diligence, and, you know, just educate yourself on your local government, your state government, even your national government. There's still a lot to be done out there, and keep fighting the good fight, everybody. You know, don't forget to be kind. I know not everybody has the same political standpoint and the same political views, but end of the day, we're all Americans. We're all human beings on this earth, and a lot of people are going through some shit. So be kind out there, do something good for somebody else, and just don't forget to smile. Even underneath your mask, people can see you smile. Also, guys, if you could go ahead and rate and review this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, it helps me out a ton and it helps other people find the podcast as well. Once again, you can find this podcast wherever you listened to podcasts on Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, you name it. Also, you can follow me on my Instagram. It's at My Cancer Story Podcast. You can even go to my website, which is www.mycancerstorypodcast.com. Thanks again for listening and stay tuned for an all new episode next Monday.